morning out there, everybody. Check 1, 2. Are we good? We're good. Dalton's happy. We're rolling right along. This is Dr. Andrew Dyer joining you live this morning. I am your Ask the Expert host for the next 53 minutes. It is my job, my duty, my honor to be with you today and every Saturday right here on WHIO. I am live in studio today, so if you have calls that you would like to get addressed on this program, the number to call here is 937-457. Is that right? Yeah, that's the new one. 937-457-1290. For so many years, it had been a different number, so I had to just check myself there. So 457-1290 with our area code in front, which is 937. That's how you get a hold of us here at the studio. But in today's program, I want to give you some, again, tools for thought, some topics that may be worth visiting now. And they're topics that I gathered throughout the week from common patient questions that I'm getting on a fairly regular basis. So I kind of mashed up three different topics into one whole program for today. So we're going to talk a little bit about creatine. It's got a common place in the social media world at the moment. And we're going to cut through some of that research and give you some tips to look for, maybe hints about that product and that topic. Also, probiotics and natural longevity. What the latest research really says. I had a patient on my Cairo table this week who asked me what would be the single biggest factor that he could do to make sure he can live as long as possible. And I looked at him and I said, wow, that's a really tough one. I know what the research says, and I'm going to share that with you in a moment, but it doesn't really boil down to just one thing. But then when you look at the research, that's actually not true. It does boil down to just one thing that they keep coming back to, study in, study out, time and time again. They come back to maintaining social connections with friends outside of your household. So I was talking about this with my wife this morning, and we were sitting around in our living room having a coffee together. And we said, you know, it's one thing for you and I to communicate with each other each day. But it's actually not what the research shows is best for longevity. Now being married is actually one of the ways to increase longevity factors too. But going out into the community and connecting with friends, even acquaintances. Say you go to the grocery store and you run into someone you haven't seen in 15 years and you stand around and chat for 20, 30 minutes. That's amazing. That's what the research shows in these blue zone areas in Italy and Greece and some of the areas in the Mediterranean, Okinawa, Japan, these blue zone areas, which if you don't know what that is, it's where people live to nearly 100 years of age and beyond. The single most determinant factor for healthy aging is maintaining those connections outside of your household that you really get into discussions and connections with other people on a daily basis. That is what the research shows. So sitting around with a group of friends last night, our friend asked, you know, what about creatine? Does it really hold up? What do the studies show? And I actually had a early 80-year-old patient ask me that same thing yesterday, and she wanted to know if she should take creatine. And while we don't carry it in our office, and I don't often recommend it cold out of the gate, I think it does have some merit. And that's what I'm saying today with the review of the literature that I have. I may reserve the right to change my mind in several months if new research comes out, which there always is. There's new research coming out all the time. And this substance or supplement has had its place in the sports world for a long, long time. Now, I played college soccer back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and when I was playing, even at the Division III college level, creatine was actually a banned substance for NCAA athletes at that time. Now, we had guys on our football team. I went to a little Division III college outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but we had guys on the football team. I know they were using it because I would see them doing it, and they were just rolling the dice on the fact that they weren't going to get caught. And I don't even know if any of them ever did. And Division III is not highly policed because nobody's going to the pros really out of the Division III level. But creatine has long had this position in the world among bodybuilders and competitive athletes. But now, with new research that's emerging, we're starting to see it become discussed on social media channels about potentially being a good support for healthy aging, in the women's health conversations, and even in the general wellness space. So what does it really do? is one discussion point to have. And creatine, let's not make any mistake about it. The body's actually making it already. So it's a naturally occurring compound stored within the muscle tissue of our body. Plays a central role, too, in rapid energy production. So our body's making some creatine on its own. And we also take it in from the foods that we eat. Most commonly, we're going to get creatine from eating meat and fish. So those high-protein, animal-type source foods are where we get it into our bodies. Now, the most studied supplemental form is known as creatine monohydrate. And that point matters because the evidence base on it is strongest for that very specific form of creatine, not the fancy newer versions with more aggressive marketing. So don't get fooled by the hype. Don't click on one TikTok or Instagram video and say, oh man, I need this. Better yet, figure out why you might benefit from it by having a thorough blood analysis done. Because if we can look in your blood work and see creatinine scores related to kidney function, if they're healthy to begin with, that bodes well on you being able to metabolize this supplement. Now, it doesn't give us all the answers, but it helps to identify that there may not be any kidney issue involved. And that's what the research on creatine monohydrate has shown over and over again. And that was the age-old kind of thorn in the side of creatine amongst bodybuilders back in the 90s when I was in college. They said, well, this could damage your kidney function. And that was the age-old thought. Well, now there's no real research that is showing this when being used at an appropriate dose. And there's ways to calculate dosage. It's based on body weight. It's based on goals. And it's really in order to stay protective for the kidneys based on how much water we're going to take in throughout the day as well. Because we know that the kidneys benefit from water. And anything extra that needs to be flushed through the system benefits by putting that water in. Now, what about some of that newer evidence out there about creatine monohydrate? In a 2025 review and meta-analysis looking at creatine supplementation combined with exercise training in older adults. See, this is the other piece. We have this thought and this notion in our current industrialized society that there's a pill for every ill. And I see that in standard medicine practice. I also see that in nutritional medicine. People come in and they've got a laundry list of supplements in front of them that first day that we meet. And they say, well, I'm on all this stuff. I said, okay, great. Why are you taking it? And they usually tell me, well, I read an article that said I needed it. I said, well, did that article know what your blood tests were? Because it probably didn't. And that's the big key difference is when you come in and see us at Take Two Healthcare, we're going to run a blood panel on you that's probably the most comprehensive blood test you've ever had in your entire life. And I say that without making any vast judgments about where you've been before, but 58 different markers, potentially up to 60, 70, 80 different markers depending upon your situation. If we're looking at a cancer protective protocol, if we're looking at hormones, if we're looking at cardiac, then we're going to have about 80 different blood markers potentially on that blood assessment for you. And we're going to know exactly what you need and why. And we can make that justification based on your blood test findings. And better yet, we can come back in a few months and make sure that the recommendations we gave you are in fact working. I had a patient this week. I'm going to give you her age to start, and then we're going to discuss a few of her findings because she did amazingly well. She is 79 years old right now. Okay, she turned 79 in January. She is a tiny person. She's 5'3" and she's 115 pounds. And I give you that visual because some of her blood test findings were actually quite good at the beginning, but we made 25 of those 54 blood markers improve within just the first couple months on our program. Now, some of them were already in a good place, so they didn't have to improve. And 10 of them were still working on fine tuning. But over those first few months, she absolutely hit a home run with the program that I put her on. And I say that not to say, our program does outperform many of the others out there, but she really did the work. I just had to guide her and give her the suggestions she needed. She was already on a really good load of nutrient support when she came in. But even with that being said, we were able to help make her better on 25 different bullet-pointed line items in her blood analysis. Now, it's very, very rare In fact, in 20 years in clinical practice, I've never seen one time yet where every single blood marker on the assessment gets better and nothing still needs work after just a couple months on the program. That's simply not how the body works on a physiological level. We can't eat enough good food, train enough and appropriately, eliminate all the environmental factors, get all the water intake in, sleep properly, all the things we know that bullet point our health to a higher level without some room for refinement and improvement even after the first 60 to 90 days are through. But even in looking at where she began with her initial assessment on the blood work, when we looked at her electrolyte panel, her phosphorus level was too high. It was at 5.0. Now, some of what phosphorus does in the body is help to regulate fluid balance, helps to balance other key minerals like sodium, potassium, chloride, things that we need for fluid regulation, cell-to-cell communication, gut health and function. And coming back to see where she started from November 12th to where she was on the 13th of April, so about 3-4 months later, it was 5 months, but we didn't start the program with her till just into January because we were waiting on a hair test to come back and a few other things. So after looking at these changes 90 days in, chloride levels are up, which is imperative for protein digestion and metabolism. Now, if we get her protein digestion and metabolism appropriate, will she need so much creatine, or will she even need creatine at all? Now, I know creatine has had some hot button research come out lately on its mental boosting capabilities in terms of slowing down things like cognitive decline. They are looking at it for Alzheimer's, dementias, and we're not going to find the answer in one simple supplement. It's not going to be a one factor code change where, oh yeah, you put creatine in and all of a sudden nobody's getting dementia and Alzheimer's anymore. The world doesn't work that way, and neither does the body. So it's not going to be a one-hit wonder for sure. But as part of a comprehensive approach to health, might not be a bad idea. Now, we don't carry it at the office. I said that at the beginning. That doesn't make it bad. It just means that I'm not going to be putting it on supplement lists for people. And we will be checking for several factors in the blood work. The other one we look at that's very close to creatine is a blood marker called creatine kinase. And creatine kinase is a blood value that tells us about muscle tissue breakdown, the exact thing that creatine monohydrate goes to impact and make better. And for this young lady of nearly 80, her creatine kinase levels were perfectly normal and healthy both times we've looked at them. So it's hard for me to justify creatine monohydrate, the supplement, really was necessary for her. But I also said, you know, if you use it in the suggested dose and we're doing all these other things to help you too, I don't think it's going to be of detriment to you. But there's a couple other key factors there. And after this first break, we'll revisit those. So we've already reached that first moment in time where I get to catch my breath. We'll take a break. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer for Take Two Healthcare, your guide to better living on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO. And we are back. Thank you very much. Dr. Andrew Dyer here. I'm a doctor of chiropractic. I also have a couple other board certifications. That is one in chiropractic acupuncture and the other is in clinical nutrition. Had a really fun experience over the last two Tuesdays. I got to give a four-hour lecture divided into two 2-hour time blocks at the University of Dayton in their Lifelong Learning Institute. And it was an absolute blast. My title of the talk was Clinical Nutrition, to be used in the prevention of three common conditions. That would be diabetes, cancer, and dementia. Now, I shared with these folks that attended my lecture about 175 slides worth of info, and we broke it up into hourly time blocks over those 4 hours. And some of the questions at the end of that talk, nobody asked about creatine that day, but there was several interested parties about the topic of probiotics. So at the end of my talk this Tuesday, we reserved some time for questions and kind of transitioning over from creatine into now gut health. But before we leave that creatine topic, just to kind of give you that summary, and whether or not I'm giving it my seal of approval doesn't really matter today, but I'm not putting myself on it at this point. I don't have a real problem with patients taking it necessarily, provided they're healthy in other places. But I think we have a lot of other wide variety of options to address health of their bones, health of their protein metabolism, and really health of their brain before we even think about adding creatine into the mix. But again, if we're using it within those scheduled guidelines, I think it's going to be quite safe until more research becomes available. Now, probiotics, that was a question and a hot topic because in much of my lecture, the first half of the 4-hour time block, we talked about things to cut out of the diet to make the diet a healthier option. And one of those key tenets that we talk about a lot is reducing the consumption of cow's milk products. So reducing dairy intake can be of major benefit to those suffering from diabetes, spring allergies. There's even well-researched topics around cancer growth and production because some of these products do have a high load of sugar and the body doesn't always digest and metabolize it very appropriately. It creates a large mucus response and that creates time and attention away from the immune system fighting what's really going on to handle some of these food sensitivity and food allergy ideas. So anytime we talk dairy, people get all up in arms about, oh, yogurt. We want to have yogurt because it has all these probiotics. Yes and no. At the beginning of that product being put into the jar or starting into its manufacturing process, there are live cultures available in that product. But through the processing of pasteurization and homogenization, some of those key, both good and bad bacteria, are killed. In fact, 95% of them are killed. That's why the processing of pasteurization and homogenization is occurring in this country to kind of quote unquote keep us safe from foodborne illness, right? The bad bacteria, the botulinum toxin, the E. coli, the staph, the strep, the things that cause infection in our bodies. Once they pasteurize and homogenize these dairy products, they alter the enzymes available for the human body to actually digest and absorb these things. So then the question remains, well, how am I going to get my probiotics if I can't count on yogurt to do it? Well, glad you asked. I'm about to give you that info. So probiotics is a large topic, a large umbrella, meaning putting good bacteria back into the system. And sometimes it's not even limited to good bacteria. Sometimes we use good yeast, good clean fungal spores and good clean bacterial spores to kind of recolonate that gut, to give the gut balance. But it's not necessarily just an appropriate thing for everybody to do. That's where the testing comes in handy. We look at your blood, we look at your hair, we look at your urine and your stool tests. And if we really want to take a deep dive into what probiotics you might benefit from the most, then a stool analysis test is really the key point and key element there, especially if the digestion problems are the key element for you. I know we're going to take another break here. And when we come back on the other side, we'll continue our discussion on probiotics and eventually lead us into some additional longevity factors for the day. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer on our live episode today for Take Two Healthcare on WHIO. We are back. Thank you very much. Dr. Andrew Dyer here with you again, live in studio. Now, I may have given you the phone number a little bit incorrectly at the beginning. It's 937-957-1290, right? That's our number. Yeah. So I had 457. That was our old one. And now we're on the new one, 957-1290. So if you didn't get to reach us because I gave you the wrong number, now I give you the bright number. So we'll take callers if you do have questions. But diving back into our probiotic topic, I wanted to just make sure that you understood the difference between a good quality probiotic and one that's just the label on the front trying to sell you something. Now, there's a lot of literature out there on probiotics and their use, their effectiveness, how they work best, the timing of when to take them. Now, what I typically do with my own probiotic intake is I will either take them first thing in the morning or last thing at night. And I do it either direction, whenever I can get nearest to the fridge and take them. So that's another key component. Several of the probiotics that we use at the office, after opening them, need to be stored in the refrigerator. Why? Because keeping those bacterial and yeast colonies cool makes them more effective. OK, Okay, it makes them last longer, for one. It's really about longevity in the capsule. You want to make sure that what you're taking is really in there and really effective and really working. So keeping them properly cooled and stored is one key component to that. A lady at the end of my UD lecture wanted me to give her a few good recommendations. If she walked into the health food store to look at probiotics, she wanted me to kind of cut through the garbage for her. And it's hard to do that because we don't always know what that person is really looking for. And it's not that one size fits all in the probiotic department, but what I often encourage patients to do is rotate in and out from several different probiotic strains. So one that I like quite often to use is called Espolardi. Espolardii. Espolardi stands for Saccharomyces boulardii. It's actually a yeast strain. I take that one myself quite often, typically two at night before bed. But what it does is it helps to recolonate the gut. And when we talk about recolonating the gut, there's so much to that. There's so much to that because when we have good bacterial balance in our gut, then the evacuation process works better. We take out the garbage regularly, multiple times a day. And if you're not going to the bathroom at least once a day, you got to change something in your daily diet. You need to get more activity, more movement, more water. It may not just be a problem of probiotic imbalance, but it may be several factors. So looking at all that can be super helpful. And there's not necessarily, again, like I said, a one-size-fits-all approach for everybody. We stock about three different kinds of probiotics throughout our office on a monthly basis. And one that we use commonly from Douglas Labs is called Multiprobiotic 4 Billion, standing for 4 billion CFUs, meaning that's how many active cultures are in that tablet when you take and consume it. Typically, most of our patients that test within their blood, hair, urine, and stool, we're going to put them on one or two daily, depending upon the findings. And not everybody gets one because not everybody needs one. Now, if you're somebody that takes antibiotics before you go and visit the dentist, it'd be a good idea to pair probiotics along with your antibiotics. You don't typically take them at the exact same moment in time throughout the day, but you can take them on the same day a couple hours apart, and that will help protect the gut from any damage from the antibiotic use. So there's a multitude of factors to consider when talking probiotics, and here's some of the buzzwords that we really need to kind of cut through the garbage with to say, not that they're useless, not that everyone should be on one daily, but rather many of these probiotics appear quite useful for some people in some situations. And that's where the testing comes in handy to tell us which people would benefit from which ones. So it kind of makes sense, right? It's not just you didn't watch the latest and greatest video on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook and say, oh, I need a probiotic. You actually got checked out and then you were identified to say, yeah, your gut function is down a little bit, either due to a variety of medications you're on or the SAD, standard American diet, as it's often abbreviated. So if that's where you fall on the scale, you know, give it some thought this week. Now, as we approach May 1st next Friday, that means 2026 is one third of the way over. And I do that as a matter of perspective. I give you that statement because how many of you, and I can't see your hands go up, but how many of you out there listening have stuck with your New Year's resolution that you made on January 1st or sometime right before or right after that? How many of you are still doing what you set out to do for 2026? And if you're not, now is really the best time here in our Midwestern Ohio weather and temperatures to institute a plan of how you're going to do something to be healthier going forward for the rest of the two-thirds of the year. See, the first third is already over, so maybe you wasted it, maybe you put it to good use, and maybe you just need to rededicate yourself. I don't know. I know I'm doing the things that I set out to do, but I could always use a little refresher to look back and say, what else could I do better? That's what optimal health is about. We never really get to the place and say, okay, we've achieved it, we've made it. It's doing all these little unglamorous things every day by matter of ritual or repeat good habits that we're putting in to kind of get to that end goal at some point in time. And maybe that end goal is living to be 85 or 90 without any reliance on pharmaceutical intervention. Maybe that's the goal. I don't know. You'll have to make the goal up yourself and then come see me and we'll talk about it. But if your goal is that, then you got to be doing things now while you're 25 or 30. In fact, I came across another study this week that said the body's size, mass, and muscle frames that you carry with you from age 18 to 22 during that critical four-year time period, post high school, during college, what your body's doing, those critical 4 years of development, really sets the timeline and predictability around where you might be when you're 60 and 70 years of age. So if you're already past that point in aging and you're not where you want to be, there's no time like the present to take a more critical look at it and see what you could do. So let's talk longevity, the highest value habits, according to the evidence. And you heard me talk about some of it at the beginning, but in a recent systematic review on healthy aging, the emphasis was on several different lifestyle factors that consistently matter. And the very first one is nutrition, followed by physical activity, keeping your mental health in check and in order, those social relationships, the avoidance of harmful behaviors, right? So smoking, alcohol intake, any addictive processes that we need to address and get out of our lives. And then sleep quality. And what are you doing for preventative health care? Now, that's a wide lens, but also a very useful one, because it reminds us that longevity isn't only metabolic or only cardiovascular or only cognitive. It's much more multidimensional. See why I had a hard time answering my patient's question this week when he said, well, what's the single biggest and most important factor I could do to be healthy? Well, I can give him that one bullet point, but really it's 10, 12, 25, 50 different bullet points that the more of those we're doing, the greater our longevity is. And longevity is far more about really the definition, meaning we're living without disease. So we're living without things like hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, cancer, dementia, and other cognitive decline. So you name the disease state, and if we're searching for the longest, healthiest life possible, then that ultimately means we need to do whatever it takes to target at the root cause, pushing those diagnoses further down the line or potentially preventing them altogether. But certainly once something like that pops up, handling it again in a multidimensional, multifactorial way can potentially be even the most specific way to move forward. I had another guy that was in my lecture at UD this week, and as I was going through some of the nutrient options that serve as preventatives to cancer, he put his hand up and he made a statement that says, well, I'm a little bit skeptical about this. I said, okay, well, skepticism is fine, but we need to understand the definition from a biochemical perspective. And in the opening page of the biochemistry text used in all medical and chiropractic colleges, they state this: vitamins and minerals are the building blocks for life. So if we understand biochemistry, even in that most simplistic definition, so think of vitamin C, vitamin D, the B vitamins, B12, vitamin E, CoQ10, curcumin complex, these nutrient options, in a simple biochemical standpoint, are the building blocks for life. Meaning, if you have a shoulder injury, a neck injury, a knee problem, diabetes, cancer, you name the condition, some part of that may be related to joint trauma or genetics or even the genetics of your parents and grandparents. There are good studies that show even 2 and 3 generations previous to us are influencing how our bodies are put together today. And so if that's you, there may be a simple biochemical explanation for why you're not healing and repairing like your other colleagues, friends, family members are. And so we know that by looking at some of these deep root cause factors, we can help uncover some of those problems. Back to my 80-year-old patient from this week, she had an elevated ferritin count at 218. And you've heard us on this program talk about ferritin time and time again, but it is a very crucial marker for determining the body's inflammatory load. She actually had such an elevated ferritin count at 218, about 70 points higher than clinically acceptable for her age and sex group. And at the same time, she was low in iron. So she had this intense backup supply building, but she may have lacked several of the critical B vitamins like B6, B9, and B12 to help the body convert that ferritin into iron. Why is all that important? Because as we reduced her inflammatory load in her body, her body was able to heal and repair faster. Again, evidenced by the fact that her platelet load came down. She was at 509 on the platelet count when we initially assessed her, and now she's down to 444. Got her back inside that medically acceptable range. She's not yet quite to that optimal or clinically acceptable range, or excuse me, optimal or healthy range, but we do need to get her continually progressing that way because the factors will drop. We also were able to drop her ESR or SED rate. That's another classic hallmark of inflammation. When the medical doctors test somebody for inflammatory changes and we, in a clinical nutrition sense, assess somebody for inflammatory components in their blood, we almost always look at that ESR and see that if it's higher than 10, that means you're not as healthy as you could be. And so we dropped hers down from 11 to 6, even at age 79. So I don't want you to think that it's ever too late, no matter what your age is. You could be 79, you could be 99. I've had patients up to 103 years of age and down as small as 3 days old. So when we do this kind of work, it can be applied to people at far ends of the spectrum and also right down the middle. But you've got to know where to go to get tested properly, and then you've got to be able to do some follow-through. I mean, make some changes, because what you were doing up until this point was clearly missing something, or your blood numbers would have been amazing at the beginning. And so there's lots to do, lots to look at, and lots to consider. Now, when we go back into a topic of longevity, especially talking again about the creatines and the probiotics of the world, it can help us maintain muscle. And if there's one thing that every listener needs to hear today, muscle is longevity tissue. And what does that mean? Well, it means the more muscle mass we can maintain at later phases and stages of our life, the longer we can function appropriately with our own balance, our own ability to sit up and take in nourishment, our own ability to get out and move so that our lungs work properly, our gut works properly, and our brain works properly, not to mention heart. But also the muscle mass helps especially aging women maintain bone mineral density, one of the leading causes of decline in the aging female population are the osteopenias and osteoporosis diagnosis. And the reason that that is the way it is not that that means we're going to see necessarily fracture happen over and over, but we're going to see potential for that fracture increase. But if we maintain our muscle mass, that decreases some of those factors. If we keep our resistance training and balance work in place, and really the practical recommendation here is around 150 minutes of moderate to intense activity per week. Now, that might not only mean laying down new mulch at home in your landscaping beds. It may not necessarily mean following behind that push lawnmower for 60 minutes a week. It's going to be more than that. There's going to be a need for resistance training. So using bands, using body weight doesn't mean you have to go to the gym, but there are a wide variety of ways to accomplish that resistance training capacity too. Yeah, we're cruising up on our final break of the day here, and we'll take that now. You've been listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer. When we come back, we'll finish our discussion on longevity and leave you with a few more food for thought items on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO.
It's an Ask the Expert weekend on Dayton and Springfield's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station, 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and...
Clouds lingering through this Saturday with more...
And we are back. Thank you, Dalton. Dr. Andrew Dyer here with you the last few minutes. And wanted to give you kind of an upbeat ending here to finish things. You know, I think we talk so much about disease states and patterns of ill health that sometimes it doesn't leave a real positive note to finish with. But no complete discussion about longevity, considering the ties in with nutrition, would be complete if we didn't mention the Mediterranean style dietary pattern. Now I don't put every single patient on Mediterranean diet, but a lot of what we do in the office is give people options on how to make their diet and their process a little easier to implement and a little bit easier to follow in terms of how can they make some of these changes. There doesn't have to be an overarching label to it. It doesn't have to be necessarily the Mediterranean diet, but that is the one that research studies show to be the most effective in helping people age well. And even in the connection with Alzheimer's, dementia, and other forms of mild cognitive impairment, when citizens of this country implement more of a Mediterranean-style diet, and I'll give you some examples, rich in plant foods, legumes, olive oil, nuts, fish, and even minimally processed staples, the literature seems to tie this in with greater health and longevity and more the absence of disease state. So especially even with older adults, the practical recommendations are around 1 to 1.2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day. Now, if you don't want to convert to kilograms, take your body weight in pounds and then multiply by about 65 to 70%. And that'll give you, so for example, 180-pound patient needs about between 100, 110, even 120 on the high end would be fine, grams of protein per day. The average chicken breast, 6 to 7 ounce chicken breast, contains 40 grams of protein, where the average egg contains only 7. So just to give you a few examples, several of the good protein powders that we recommend at the office will give you 25 to 28 grams of protein per one scoop. Those can be mixed with almond milk, ice, honey, some berries, depending upon your sugar loads in your blood. But those will help you get that protein concentration in too. And I'm going to stake my longevity recommendations for most of my patients much more on the protein intake than on the creatine intake. I use a nutrient at the office called Brain Sustain. It was designed by David Perlmutter, MD, and it's manufactured in Florida. Good, clean nutrient called Brain Sustain from a company called Zymogen. We stock it at the office, and we use it only after testing our patients for markers that indicate they may be developing or at some point in the future may be developing an Alzheimer's-like condition. The p-tau217 blood marker that we've run on many, many patients is the best laboratory indicator, even in asymptomatic patients, that condition will develop at some point in the future. So if that number comes back high in your blood testing, you're going to get a recommendation from us called Brain Sustain. And that Brain Sustain nutrient is excellent for fighting off the effects of chronic aging and destructive disease like that. So I know I told you it was going to be positive, but the positive piece here is there's plenty of things we can do about it. There are things we can do to make it better, and we have to start somewhere, and that somewhere is with testing. So I really appreciate you tuning in today. I want to thank you for being there to listen. And we're going to be back next Saturday. Either myself, Dr. Merkel, or Dr. Yaley will be right here behind this microphone to give you more food for thought on Take 2 Healthcare, your guide to better living on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO.